I stepped into the crisp morning air, which would have been downright frigid and unbearable if I didn't have magic shielding me from the worst of it. I was trying to save my energy for what would surely turn into a battle for a territory. Ulrich met me in front of my suite.
It's as cold as a witch's tit out here.
I never understood that expression. Jasper joined us, and then Dave and Syra. Indigo and Edgar came next, followed by a trickle of the rest of them. Today, they were early. Yesterday, when it was important, they were late. It was like they didn't want things to go the expected way.
Witch's tit.
Jasper pointed at the sky. Ulrich and I looked up. Nothing but pale blue.
Like, they fly on their brooms and it's cold, so their tits would be cold.
Huh. I nodded. I could see that.
Okay, but what about a witch's nose?
It's a swear.
Jasper frowned at Ulrich.
You don't swear using nose. It's as cold as a witch's nose out here. Not the same punch.
What about warlock's balls?
In the stories, do warlocks fly brooms?
When Ulrich didn't supply him with an answer, Jasper shrugged.
Well, even if they do, their balls are probably the warmest part about them in that scenario. Also smashed. Now, it's as uncomfortable as a smashed dick might work, but then you lose the witch and warlock scenario.
Flying brooms aren't actually a thing, right?
Not that I know of.
Neither are witches and wands. Dix and Jane's got that part of magic wrong.
Austin stepped out of our suite in a dress shirt and trousers. I wore a similar outfit. This was a professional situation, and it was thought we should dress the part, even though it was almost certain that we'd end up fighting. A muumuu made a lot more sense.
Wait, sir!
Mr. Tom hurried out with a breakfast burrito wrapped in foil.
You forgot the other half of your breakfast. You can't be fighting and killing on a half-empty stomach. Here.
Austin slowed, cocked his head in annoyance, and put out his hand. Mr. Tom filled it with the burrito. What do you say? I grinned at him.
Thank you.
Austin gave me a look before starting forward again.
Manners, lovely. Now, miss, do you require more coffee for the drive?
No, I'm fine. I hurried to keep up with Austin as Mr. Tom headed back to the suite, where he'd left a whole basket filled with treats for the group. We took the stairs and met the others out by the building's main door. Tristan and Broken Sue had everyone in formation, a larger crew than we'd brought to the meeting yesterday. Bessa Haunik waited in the trees, no more than a handful. Traveling with a large force was difficult, and so we brought as many as we could comfortably handle. We hoped we wouldn't need them. I should probably be more nervous.
Why?
I'm always nervous before a potential battle. Austin directed people to the vans where Tristan and Broken Sue took over.
You don't have enough information to be nervous yet. On purpose. I'll fill you in on the ride.
Austin glanced back at my people, still waiting by the door.
Why aren't they coming?
I turned, putting up my hand to block the glare of the late morning sun. Where's Neve?
I got it.
Ulrich pulled out his phone. Also, why aren't you guys with the gargoyles? It was Jasper who answered.
We're with you today. Remember the subset of training we're doing now?
Right. My team within the larger team of flyers. Essentially, the people who would help me stick to the plan.
Jesse.
Neve walked in from the right, Fred in tow. Her steps were hurried and her eyes tight, not usual for her. Fred's expression was closed in solemn worry. What's wrong?
Momar's people know where Sebastian and Nessa are. We spent the morning making sure. Nessa had some tag-alongs, as Fred calls them, on their setup. Spies, in other words. Fred bucked them off, but that just changed their spying from computer to in-person. They've kept their distance, but they're there. They're documenting schedules, activities, dwellings. They're gearing up for an extraction.
Shadows pooled and coiled as Tristan joined us. His arms flared out from his sides and his power thrummed. I put a hand on his arm to keep him calm, or maybe keep myself calm, because I was suddenly blanketed in a cold sweat. Where are they?
Kansas, 2 states away.
That spider's meticulous. Momar, I mean. If it were up to the ground crew, they would have gone in and grabbed them ages weeks ago. The spider is nailing down all the many details so nothing will go wrong.
Jesse, I think he knows that Sebastian and Nessa are Elliot Graves and the captain. and that they were the ones helping us, it wouldn't be too hard to deduce. They weren't active leading up to the time at Kingsley's when some unknown and powerful mage was helping you behind the scenes. A mage with a special interest in you. An ingenious mage. One that knew the dark web so well that they could hide the weapons purchase. And then you showed up to collect. Then there's the two mages that escaped the caves. They're probably dead now. They knew Elliot was moonlighting on you. And then the deaths they framed us for. That looked like their handiwork, not ours. I noticed right away. If Momar is as good as he seems, he would have noticed too. It's all there if you piece together the details.
But my blood ran cold. Elliot and the captain had gone dark when I was getting training from Sebastian. But then they'd immediately shown up on the map when I went to Elliot's caves.
Kinsella.
I would have killed him, not knowing it would get me in trouble with the Mage's Guild, but he disappeared. Disappeared, and then turned up on Elliot Graves' kill list. I hadn't known who was behind Elliot Graves at that point, and then so much happened. I hadn't properly backtracked to think about the ramifications. Elliot Graves had been dark all those years, until he showed up with an interest in me and did me a favor by taking out my enemies.
The Anal Repository never would have made those connections.
That was the name she called the Mage's Guild.
Their game is in extorting and throwing their weight around. They want easy money. Momar is a different sort of animal, a much more dangerous one.
Neve snapped her fingers at Mr. Tom.
Come here, you idiot! Can't you see there's a change in plan? We need to get the plane here as soon as we can, boy. We need to get those mages out of there.
How much time?
We don't know, and that's the honest truth. There was talk of the extraction crew going dark. Fred was able to get their locations, but we're not sure how valid that intel is. They appear to be moving into the area, but not necessarily into position. We want to get moving.
It felt like my brain was rapidly firing. It had always taken us a few days to sort out private jet travel, what with the various planes, pilots, and tiny airports. There wasn't a magical strip in this area, and we needed a magical pilot and certain size plane for the Bassa Haunik. I didn't dare leave them here. If we showed up to grab the mages while Momar's people were attempting the extraction, we'd need the extra hands. But there was no way we could leave right now to handle this. The earliest would likely be in the evening, but more probably the next morning or even the day after. Can you get a message to the mages?
I've left a message on the encrypted phone and through their setup in the woods, but we don't know how often they check those. The IPs they use seem to be cafes and other random locations. Going off-grid means they aren't easily reachable.
Damn it. I took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Austin waited to the side, and Broken Sue stood in front of an open van door. They would leave right now to get the mages, not bothering to prove anything to the collection of alphas. But we had no transportation. That was the sum total of what we needed to plan. Get there, bust in, and either force the mages to come home with us, or fight them out of the enemy's grasp. Until we had planes, however, we could do nothing but wait. Doing one thing at a time was a luxury we hadn't had for a while now. Dang it. Mr. Tom, get on that transportation. Neve, you and Fred find out more information or help Mr. Tom. The rest of us are going to take care of that bad alpha while you handle that. The very moment we have a way to get to Nessa and Sebastian quickly, we're taking it, okay?
Right so.
Neve motioned for Fred to start walking back the way they'd come. Mr. Tom held out the basket to Edgar.
No, not to—
I got it.
Ulrich ran that way, intercepting the basket just as Edgar's fingers brushed the edges.
Sorry, Edgar, but you get really weird about food.
Oh, that's okay. No one seems to eat my offerings anyway.
Jasper grabbed a muffin.
He just told you why.
I started toward the vans. My power blasted out. A call to arms. Load up. I made a circle in the air with my finger, belatedly noticing Kingsley and some of the other alphas down the way, watching. I pointed at them. We're doing this to prove that we can handle ourselves in battle. Better get there on time because we can't dally. We have other people to save. Austin didn't need to bark orders. Everyone filed in quickly, with the Bassa Haunik in the large cargo vans at the back of the convoy. Austin and I climbed into a van. Tristan sat in the driver's seat. How hard is this gonna be?
Kingsley doesn't think we'll have a problem. With you in this mood, that's almost certainly true. We'll knock this out and figure out what needs to happen for Nessa and Sebastian, okay?
I looked out the window. The saving grace was that I knew the extraction team wouldn't kill the mages. They'd want information, and for that, the mages would need to be kept alive. Sebastian had undergone torture before, and Nessa was tough. Even if we didn't get there first, we could still save them. Still, I'd really rather we got there first.
Jess, listen to me closely.
Tristan drove near the homestead, a beaten-down place with small dwellings, dirty streets, and very few people out and about. It almost looked like a ghost town.
Watch your six at all times. If someone comes at you, that constitutes a challenge. The outcome is at your discretion, but in a situation like this, you kill. The people in charge have made life miserable for the pack members. They've committed atrocities because no one could stop them. If they're spared, they could and probably will move on and do it again.
No problem.
You don't have to make it flashy, but you can if it gets the job done. Do not heal.
Got it.
Alpha Steel had filled them in on how one of these things typically worked. Essentially, they waltzed in, threw their weight around, challenged, killed the baddies, and tried to help facilitate a new leadership. That, or help them move on. Not today. They wouldn't have time for cleanup. Nessa and Sebastian needed them. Tristan understood Jesse's deciding to help these people with the time they would be idle anyway, but the other alphas were in tow, and they could help these people pick up the pieces. They shouldn't have waited to help in the first place. Jesse's magic created a solid drumbeat of urgency in Tristan's middle. The connections were active, and through her, he could feel everyone's basic location. She had her finger on the pulse. The enemy had no idea what was on their doorstep. Their worst nightmare was about to see them into the afterlife. The alphas tagging along would get to see what it was like when a mage entered a shifter fight.
I might make a spectacle.
Jesse's voice was laced with worry and anger. In the rearview mirror, Tristan could just see her fingernails clawing into her knee.
Then you make a spectacle.
Tingles crawled along Tristan's spine. Alpha Steel had not only given Jesse the green light to go hard, but he also clearly intended to go hard himself. Broken would go scorched earth. He had a history of not helping when he thought he should have, but he'd been lost and defeated during that time, unsure of his own existence. He'd damn well prove he intended to help now. The larger street wound through town and stopped at what must have passed for their central hub. A brown patch of dead grass supported a kid's play area that didn't look like it had seen kids in a long time. A broken tire swing hung from an abandoned house down the way, and the row of businesses in what passed for the main strip seemed in disrepair and were mostly shuttered. Park or stop in the middle of the street?
Middle. Block it up.
Tristan stopped the van and exited. The others did as well. A surge of magic washed across him and kept going. It would cover the town.
Come out and meet your fate.
Another shiver washed over him, and urgency ate at his core. He didn't want to be here. He wanted to be airborne, flying toward Natasha. She needed him, and he wasn't there. But his wings would take too long. And he couldn't go alone. Their enemy was organized and highly effective. Tristan wouldn't be enough to combat even lower tier mages, not if they brought numbers. Against a mage as powerful and cunning as Elliot Graves, they'd definitely bring numbers. Tristan gritted his teeth as they walked out in all directions from the van. Another peal of magic thundered forth. With Jesse, they didn't need to go knocking on doors. Alpha Steel led the way to the square of dead grass, giving them some space. the Basahaunic didn't climb out. Tristan learned why when Broken caught up to him.
They didn't want to scare our new friends away.
Their people pushed to the sides in organized lines. Tristan stood in front of the gargoyles, Broken in front of the shifters. The other alphas from the meeting stayed in their vehicles, watching. Another peal of thunderous magic.
Come here.
Alpha Steel waited in the middle of the space, and Jessie came over to wait next to Tristan. She wasn't afraid. Tristan could feel her anticipation through the connection. She was giving Alpha Steel the limelight. They were a damn good team, each happy to help the other show off.
If they get one look at us and try to run, you get airborne and bring them back.
The ragtag Ivy House crew ambled forward, filling in the space between the shifters and gargoyles. They hadn't had a chance to shift last night to show the visiting packs. Everyone had been too tired. They would do it soon. Or maybe that had been the plan all along. With the next magical wave, movement caught Tristan's eye. A shiny Corvette stopped at the end of a side street, the way blocked by the procession of vans. Other vehicles stopped behind it, the enforcers. They exited their vehicles, Alpha first, and then the others, no one in sync. Bulky forms walked in a haphazard line with their arms flared and a padding of fat on their person. They weren't in their best shape. Even from here, Tristan could tell they would be no match for Austin Steele, not even Broken. Hell, half the shifters here could take the approaching Alpha. The Alpha crossed between parked vans, looking them over. His gaze ran down the line to the head, where there wasn't a shiny sports car to scream status and money. The Alpha, a man only in his late 20s and clearly too dumb to know what awaited him, sneered. His enforcers were of a similar age, and only a couple showed sudden wariness.
What's all this then?
The Alpha stepped onto the grass and looked everyone over. His gaze lingered on Broken, and he entirely dismissed the gargoyles and other magical types. Jessie might not have been there at all. His people spread out behind him, half the force of Alpha Steel's people. Finally, the resident Alpha met Austin Steele's gaze. The newcomer's muscles flexed and his jaw clenched. He was very expressive for a shifter and downright comical for an Alpha. He hadn't had good training.
This is the end of the line for you and your enforcers.
Look.
Tristan followed Jesse's gaze. People peeked out from around buildings, clearly frightened and cautious. They had their phones out, filming. That was what they needed for the shifter side of things. Someone like Patty. They needed someone facilitating gossip.
That right.
The resident Alpha spat to the side, not taking his eyes off Alpha Steel.
On whose authority?
Mine.
It was more of a growl than a word.
Well, see, you can't challenge me. You gotta have some sort of official capacity to come in here and throw your weight around.
Is that what you're doing here? Creating rules that make no sense?
Alpha Steel didn't move, didn't even twitch a muscle. But suddenly, the resident Alpha jerked as though slapped. Alpha Steel must have let his beast peek out of the darkness.
You've been plaguing these people long enough. It ends today. You can challenge me officially, or you can run. Either way, you will die. Choose.
Gracious.
Heat soaked Jessie's tone. Her gargoyle liked that threat. Tristan knew how she felt. He wanted to be in the action. The resident Alpha huffed.
We've got an imbalance of power here, and I didn't challenge you. You've got to allow me to choose another.
You're a cancer to the world of shifters, a disgrace to our magical type. I don't gotta do anything. Made-up rules won't help you with me.
He undid his buttons.
Neither will real ones. Or don't you know who I am? I'm Austin Steele, and I'm here to tuck you into your grave.
The resident Alpha smirked, but his eyes appeared cagey in a hurry.
Steele? Never heard ya.
Obviously a lie. A big one. Fear soaked into the lines of his body. His panicked gaze flicked right to what was probably his beta. The beta inclined his head slightly and touched a flat area in his pocket. Someone else in line couldn't keep himself from glancing off toward the buildings of the town.
Heads up, Tristan whispered to Jesse. Incoming.
Yeah, even I could... Oh, no.
The incoming wasn't what Tristan had expected. He'd been expecting the rest of their force running to ambush. Instead, it was five people shoving children in front of them. Two kept their hands wrapped around the backs of little necks. All the adults held knives. Suddenly, Tristan couldn't see anything but red. Red everywhere, pulsing at the edges of his vision, tightening his chest, curling his hands into fists. If he had his way, these shifters would die painfully for this horror, for using innocence as a shield. Gruesomely. A pulse of magic swept the area. Jesse was calling in the Basahaunik. She put a hand on Tristan's forearm.
I won't let the children be harmed. Be easy, Tristan. We don't want any sudden movements here. Keep the gargoyles in check.
What?
The resident Alpha was trying to look around in confusion while not taking his eyes off Alpha Steel. He shook it off.
Just remember who it was who said they didn't like rules.
One of his guys pulled away from their haphazard line, took out his phone, and presumably started filming.
You don't have rules, then neither do I. Keep to your business, leave here without trouble, and we'll have no reason to spill the kitty's blood.
Jesse walked toward a frozen and seething Alpha Steel, her movements syrupy, slow, and graceful. The wind fluttered her hair. She wore a kind smile as she addressed the resident Alpha.
Hello.
She crossed in front of Alpha Steel, trailing her hand behind, and took one of his. He shook. Clearly, he was doing everything in his power to keep his beast at bay, but it was a struggle. He, like Tristan, like the inferno on the other side that was broken, wanted to smear this vermin from the earth. The resident Alpha's expression closed in confusion.
I'm the co-ruler.
She shrugged with a big smile.
Alpha, whatever.
She leaned against Alpha Steel, looping her arm around his.
I'm his mate, so please have a care how you speak to me. You must know what happens to an Alpha if his mate is threatened. He won't be able to help himself, and all our viewers at home will blame you and not him. How about we try to settle this peacefully?
Basahaunik crawled across the street, low to the ground. They darted into bushes and behind trees. Once they were near any sort of natural element, they disappeared. Very clever.
How about this?
The resident Alpha scowled at her in annoyance and confusion.
How about you get back in your crappy vans and see yourselves out of here? The people here are doing just fine. We don't need any outsiders.
He paused for a moment.
What the hell are you anyway?
She shrugged one shoulder.
A mom.
She spun away from Alpha Steel as a peal of thunderous magic rang out around her.
Attack!
A jet of magic sliced across the five newcomers and their hostages. Tristan had a moment of abject terror that she'd hit the children, but then the people standing behind them shook. Their knives fell from their limp hands. She was disarming them. She figured out how to do it without messing with the animal portion of a shifter. The enforcers shuddered in fear and confusion. A Basahaunik surged forward from behind one of them, seemingly appearing out of thin air. Then another. One of the enforcers reached for a kid, but another Basahaunik was there immediately. A vicious crack said his neck snapped. Jesse ignored the resident Alpha and shoved out her hands at the shifters nearest her. In a moment, it was like someone had lost control of a paint blaster. Red sprayed everywhere, across the ground, jetting into the air, and then smearing into a sort of paste on an invisible wall. Bones turned into pulp, and eyes somehow rolled away. Tristan could handle a lot, and had, but the suddenness of all that and the extreme nature made his stomach boil. She didn't stop, only turned and fired another jet of magic, and another.
Skin was ripped apart. Limbs were severed. A man was torn in half, and then each half exploded like a piñata. Broken stood there, stunned like Tristan, like most of their people. Except for Aurora. She burst into her animal and loped across the grass for the beta, who had dropped his phone and started running. He caught sight of the up-and-coming alpha tiger at his back and morphed into a mangy wolf. She was on him in an instant, clawing at his back and ripping into his fur. A giant roar startled Tristan. Alpha Steel stood on his hind legs in his great polar bear form. In front of him, cowering, was a largest black bear with matted fur and no hope in hell. Alpha Steel gave no quarter and was on him in a flash, punishing him for all he'd done, for daring to bring out children, for daring to breathe. Tristan finally shook himself out of an embarrassing stupor.
No.
It took him a moment to realize that command had come from Edgar, who was currently standing very close to his side.
No, no, Uncle Trish, we must not interrupt the miss when she is practicing. Oh, I wish I would have brought my helmet and padding. The situation clearly calls for it. Oof, she is really on a roll.
And so she was. Having trapped the other shifters in a magical bubble to keep them from running and systematically trying one horribly grisly spell after another, blood spatter hit him, and he didn't know what part of a body it had come from, or which body, or why he was suddenly having trouble with his stomach when he had surely done worse in his lifetime. Right? Nessa really should have been here to see this. It would later rest all her misgivings about her own darkness. She could never hold a candle to this. Alpha Steel finished ripping the resident Alpha apart before he launched forward to help his mate. She let him into her magical cage, leaving the enforcers trapped with a monster. She finished off a spell that had a shifter strangling himself. The least gruesome of them all, but somehow the hardest to watch. Before magic pumped into the field, it came out in gushes. Hard and heavy. It wasn't meant for her people. It was meant for the watchers in the cars.
The Alphas wanting to see what Jesse and Alpha Steel could really do.
If they hadn't already been staring with slack jaws at the field, they would now. The magic made it so. Jesse stripped quickly, and the feeling through the connections told them all to do the same. No, not all of them. Just the flyers, the spectacles. Those a shifter was unfamiliar with. The directives came quickly. Pulses of magic through the sky and through the connections, just like they had in Kingsley's territory, like in a genuine battle. Tristan let out a mighty roar before he shot into the sky. Once there, he hovered and issued the call for the other gargoyles, working his hardest to ensure the vibration worked into the bones of the alphas in the cars. It would blast for miles. Gargoyles rose all around him, followed by the beautiful luminescence of Jessie with her streaks of pinkish purple. Her magic rained down on the field below, a call for flight, a command to organize and get moving. Syra streaked fire before spewing it down on the car Kingsley and some of the other alphas inhabited. Tristan was moving at the same time Jesse was, only he was much faster. He grabbed her around the middle and darted toward the car as Hollis took flight. Jesse pulled the fire away with magic before pounding the observing alphas with a spell that dinged off the metal. It couldn't get through. It was just for effect. Hopefully that wasn't a rental car, and if so, hopefully they'd gotten insurance. Jessie pointed, and Tristan felt what she needed. She wanted to fly over the town and ensure that everyone was safe, that there wasn't anyone else they needed to take care of. He swooped low, not far from the roofs, then slowed his pace and tossed her away so that she could work on her own. She did. Dropping lower still and peering into windows and waving as she flew by. Her magic now was swells of peace and comfort, compassion and welcome. She was trying to set the town at ease.
People came out of their houses and looked up in wonder. More than a few took out their phones to film the action. A great many headed toward the hub of town. She met them there, changing back into her human form and accepting a muumuu from Ulrich. Tristan landed and stepped aside to let Jesse work. She was the model of grace and kindness, hugging the children she'd helped, speaking to families and hearing their woes. Indigo was there as well, a physical healer in battle, but an emotional healer after the fact. She walked among the townspeople, touching arms or grabbing hands and chatting. Jesse and her people were showing why she sparked such loyalty in her territory, fierce in battle, compassionate in peace. If Jesse felt the urgency to leave, she didn't show it. She did, however, always have her phone in her hand, retrieved from the van. She was on call, and she didn't forget it.
I should burn all this, right?
Cyrus stopped beside Tristan, her gaze on his junk. He hadn't received a muumuu yet, as Ulrich had gotten busy helping a boy find his parents.
No, please don't burn my dick off. I'm rather partial to it. Also, it's rude to stare at other people's private areas.
It's not very private right now.
She grinned up at him.
It's a little distracting because it's quite big. The gargoyles agree that your size isn't preferable because then your partners don't want you to stick it in their rump.
He blinked at her for a moment.
That's my burden to bear, I guess.
Yeah.
She nodded and pointed at the messy playground.
The blood and goo and stuff. I should burn all that, right? These people probably don't want to clean it up.
Give me a moment. I'll check with the alphas.
You might put on a muumuu so you're not as distracting. People might fear for their rumps.
He grabbed the muumuu. Jesse and Alpha Steel stood with Kingsley and a couple of the other alphas. The rest were clustered by the somewhat discolored car. Marjorie, one of the more powerful alphas, swallowed hard.
Very eye-opening.
She's just one mage. One. And she could do all that from a distance. Now, imagine hundreds of them spaced all around your territory with trained combat professionals besides. You just saw what Jesse and Austin's team are capable of, and yet, it was almost curtains for us. Think that through next time someone says mages pose no threat for an alpha of their stature or a pack of their size.
Kingsley put out his hand to direct Jesse and Alpha Steel away. Marjorie and Kevin, left standing behind, looked at each other wearily. It was one thing to hear about it and another to actually see it. Although, in fairness, Tristan had never seen that level of horror from any other mage. He bet Sebastian hadn't either. Ivy House had some seriously hardcore spell books. Others like it had probably been outlawed somewhere through the ages and burned. Broken stepped up, his body language saying he was looking for directions, like Tristan was. Since none of the alphas tensed, telling them to move on, they both hung around.
That was...
Kingsley swallowed hard and gave Jesse a poignant look.
I didn't realize I was squeamish until today.
Yeah.
She checked her phone screen.
Those spells aren't something I can use all the time. They take a lot of energy to pull off. I didn't want to scare the townspeople or anything, so I didn't intend on practicing them. But then they played dirty.
She shrugged.
I reacted.
You did, yes. It was ingenious how you handled that. The soft touch for Austin to keep him in line while working yourself closer so your spell would be effective. I explained how you can connect with your team, how you were able to call in the Basa Haunek when you needed them. That's what you were doing, right? All that?
Yeah, there was a lot going on. Everyone was keyed up. I was trying to time everything so those kids stayed safe.
She shook her head.
As safe as possible, at any rate.
I was about ready to detonate and took every ounce of control I possessed to keep from exploding into my beast.
Kingsley inclined his head.
You showed well. Those in my car could see your battle for control. Marjorie almost got out when we saw their hostages. I told her not to aggravate matters, that you'd handle it.
He put his hand on Jesse's shoulder.
You showed extremely well. You can't keep your people in a line while walking, but when it really counts, your level of precision and battle acumen is unparalleled.
The way you handled everyone, including checking in with the people afterward.
He nodded proudly.
You've proven every single claim I've laid at your feet, and you've done it spectacularly. Your gargoyles have as well, especially your monster.
His eyes sparkled for Tristan, his version of a full-blown smile.
Broken, however, didn't get to do nearly as much as he would have liked, I think.
Broken's shoulders hitched, and he turned just slightly, his gesture meaning,
"Not relevant."
Kingsley glanced over at Aurora, who was clad in a purple muumuu and talking to the townspeople. Broken hadn't been relevant because Aurora had handled matters.
Yes, she's always been great at anticipation.
She beat me to it.
Broken cocked his head.
Fair play to her.
She said,
Kingsley shifted his weight.
Uncomfortable. She mentioned, Jesse, that you worked her out of her beast in the challenge, not forced her out, as usually has to happen, but coaxed her out.
Yeah.
Jesse checked her phone screen again. Still nothing.
I had to learn that myself. It helps when someone guides you. I had Austin, and she has both of us.
Kingsley looked at Alpha Steel.
I didn't realize she had that much of Dad at her.
I didn't either. I also didn't realize it was a problem until Jess gave her a teaching moment in front of all her peers. Amazingly, it just made Aurora look more badass.
Jesse has a gift.
Kingsley winked at her.
Controlled chaos. I cannot wait to say I told you so to the other alphas. I'll see you back at the hotel.
With that, he turned and strode away, any looseness of manner quickly returning to his stoic alpha facade. Austin turned to Broken and Tristan.
It speaks highly of you two that he treats you as equals. Now, let's get all this cleared away. The others have already agreed to set this place to rights and offer the help these people need. We'll head back.
Tristan asked Jesse about Syrah's offer to burn all the blood and goo so the townspeople didn't need to clean up.
Yeah, probably should. Damn it, why no news?
She handed her phone off to Tristan.
Hold that, will ya? Syrah's gonna go to extreme, and I'm gonna have my hands full trying to keep the whole place from burning down.
Nessa was probably asleep. Sebastian sat on the couch in the living room in near darkness, watching a muted cooking show Nessa had left on. The hour hand on the wall clock had slowly worked its way past 2. A critter scurried in the bushes outside the window, stopping in its foraging. There were a lot of critters this near the woods. When they first settled here, it had put him on edge. He'd constantly checked the windows, trying to figure out what was lurking out there. He'd sent spells out the door looking for prowlers. He'd always come up empty, only finding animals, and so his anxiety had mostly subsided.
You've got a tag along.
A spy. Someone hanging around without Nessa being aware. That meant a level of personnel the guild had never employed. It meant a new, harder sort of game, one Nessa was barely fit for. Being off-grid was hard, but it was safer. Another critter scurried on the other side of the house, this one larger. Too large? He looked that way, but what would he see? There was only a sliver of a moon tonight, and it was mostly obscured by clouds. The street lamp on this run-down corner of nowhere was 50 yards away. It glowed, but the light barely reached the ground. He waited for a moment, rewarded with more scurrying. Large, but following the sound patterns of a normal critter. Nothing to worry about. He tapped his fingers against his knee. Nessa was definitely asleep. She'd gone to bed nearly 2 hours ago. These days, she didn't tend to stay asleep, but she could usually conk out pretty quickly. The minute hand clicked a few more notches. He finally stood and quietly walked into the kitchen. Among the papers in the corner was the pushed-aside, but not at all forgotten, encrypted phone. They had to stay off the grid to avoid detection, and so they couldn't use it. Besides, Neve had changed the message style, now delivering incoming text to their social media accounts or other message centers. Jesse had mostly gone quiet. For reasons he couldn't explain, the breath caught in his chest. His hands shook so badly he had to stop reaching for the phone. He squeezed his eyes tightly and braced against the counter, struggling to control his breathing, to work his way out from under the sudden panic attack. He hadn't gotten one of these since his sister's health had started failing. Not for the first time. and certainly not for the last. He wondered if they were doing the right thing. Times had changed drastically. They had a new enemy now. A much savvier, more intelligent, more controlled enemy. Their old tricks weren't working as well, and back then they'd had guidance from his sister's visions. Now, they didn't have any cheat sheets, and he wondered if they were actually good enough to get to the goal line. He wasn't so sure.
Harden up, Sebastian.
His sister had said that to him when she was slipping away.
Harden up. There's always a rainbow. If you look hard enough.
He reached for the phone. He didn't care if Jesse and her crew knew where he and Nessa were. He didn't care if Tristan sent Nessa those gorgeous purple flowers or books to help her learn. He welcomed it, in fact. Her sassy little smile said she rather liked the game, as annoyed as it made her. She liked being the object of the Predator's focus. Sebastian liked being useful, liked coming up with that brooch for Syra or a new serum to help Edgar cheat in his flower shows. If only he had a magical way to help that vampire with his doily obsession. I wonder how his killer flowers are going. Sebastian pushed the button on the archaic phone and waited for it to start up. The screen flashed. The line inched across. And then it went dark.
Dang, no battery.
He pulled open the nearest drawer. Notepads, pens, scissors. Nessa liked order. She didn't seem to understand that a junk drawer was supposed to be messy. The next drawer had wound up perfectly arranged electronics cords. He grabbed the one he needed as a snap outside caught his attention. The cord unfurled as he turned that way and listened. Nothing disturbed the silence. He plugged the cord into the socket and turned the phone around. As a strange feeling caught in his chest, it felt like a release, kind of. His panic attack finally subsiding? He frowned as he pushed the connector into the phone and set it gently on the counter. The symbol for charging lit the screen. In a moment, he should be able to turn it on. The feeling in his chest happened again, stronger this time. It was then that the silence of the night snagged his attention. Not the stillness. That often happened when the critters had all wandered away. No, the silence. No owls calling to each other from the opposite sides of the house. No shrill cry of a coyote or the chirping or trilling of various kinds of frogs from the nearby creek. His small hair stood on end and he straightened, absently pushing the button to start the phone while his mind went back in time. Did he remember silence in the middle of the night? Near dawn, yes. There was a period where the night creatures went to bed and the day animals hadn't yet roused. He often went to the port with a cup of coffee to enjoy the first rays of the sun. In those times, it felt like he was the only one awake in the world. The phone started to life, but his ears strained to hear the sounds outside. He looked at the nearest window, its blinds pulled. That feeling went off in his chest again. His wards. Someone was dismantling his wards in a way he'd never felt before. The magic didn't alert him, but the person, or persons, wasn't strong enough to completely hide the effects of deconstructing his spell. If he'd been asleep, he never would have noticed. The phone screen flared to life. One new message popped up. He'd barely gotten a glimpse of the warning before he was spinning for the hallway. And then everything happened at once. Glass shattered in three of the windows in the living room. Caught by the blinds and showering a small section of the floor, more glass broke at the back of the house. The bedrooms.
Nessa!
He put on a burst of speed. His socks slid against the polished wood floor as he tried to turn the corner, and his shoulder rammed into the hallway entrance corner. Ripping sounded behind him. The blinds were coming down. Magic flared all around him, shot from the windows. It blackened the wall near his face and flew into the hallway by his side. More glass shattered, and he realized people had surrounded the house. They'd brought a hell of an arsenal. Momar really wanted Elliot Graves. If Sebastian and Nessa were caught, they'd be mercilessly tortured for information. Heart in his throat, knowing he had to somehow get them out of here. He threw up a defense, and a shot hit his barrier. Nessa screamed from behind her closed door. His feet pounded the wood. A flare of light caught his notice out of the corner of his eye, and a shot of magic zipped behind him as he ran past the bathroom. Nearly at his room, he constructed another magical barrier. A black boot stepped out from the shadows, followed by a big body and a face in a ski mask. A club swung around before he could raise his hands. The hard wood struck his head as Nessa screamed again. Blackness rushed in.